Morning, everyone. Today's daf and Yomah daf Yudalid. Yesterday, the discussion of the Gemara revolved around the Kohen Gadol and his one wife. The only place in the Torah, I believe, that the Torah actually demands that one man be married to one woman, and that's the Kohen Gadol and Yom Kippur. It could be true, by the way, year round. I mean, it could be that this requirement is for the Kohen Gadol's year round to have a monogamous relationship with just one wife, but certainly. On Yom Kippur, he needs to have it. It's hard to imagine, by the way, that the allowance of the Kohen Gadol to have more than one wife, and then what do you do for Yom Kippur? Meaning, look, I'm really sorry, it's Yom Kippur. You know, it was nice, but Yom Kippur's coming up, and I got to whittle it down to one. That's hard, it's just hard to understand, hard to imagine. But okay, but anyway, but finally, he's got to be married. Rav Yehuda and our Mishnah, going all the way back to the beginning of the Masechta, so Rav Yehuda had a concern that maybe his wife is going to die. Now, for two deaths, that Rav Yehuda says we're not going to be concerned with, but for the death of his wife, we're concerned. And we know for the Kohen to do the Avodah Yom Kippur, he has to be a married man. So he needs a wife. So Rav Yehuda says, so what do? So you are maskinin lo. You set aside another woman in the event that his wife dies. The Gemara, on Daf Yud Gimel, yesterday's Daf, so went through the details, meaning that was the basic idea. But then when it's all in the details. And in the details, it's a little bit difficult to understand how you're going to do that. Meaning, how are you going to set aside another wife? And the problem exists where, if in the event that his wife dies, so now, what are you going to do? You're going to get married on Yom Kippur itself? You're going to get married on Yom Kippur itself? Meaning, how exactly are you going to set him up with the second wife in the event that his first wife dies? So that was the problem. So the solution, which the Gemara Bavli didn't discuss, which we discussed yesterday through Tosfos and through the Yushalmi, is he'll get married on Yom Kippur. Okay? In other words, the marriage on Yom Kippur is an Issa D'Rabbanan. The Issa D'Rabbanan is Kinyan. You're not allowed to make Kinyanim on Shabbos on Yantiv, but that's the Din D'Rabbanan. But we're in the base of Mikdash, and you ain't supposed to be Mikdash. So that was the Yushalmi's way of understanding how Rav Yehuda works. Okay? But the entire daf yesterday, right? The entire daf yesterday.
What they actually did.
Correct. Right. Absolutely correct. In other words, we all like the chachamim. We're not choshish lamisa. We're not concerned with death. So from our standpoint, yesterday's daf was just tor lishma, meaning it was just correct. But for us, it wouldn't matter. Now that's the Yerushalmi's approach. What's the Bavli's approach? So the Bavli's approach was basically yesterday's daf. The entirety of yesterday's daf, most of yesterday's daf, was revolving around the dilemma of how are you going to do it for Rav Yehuda? And again, our Bavli doesn't hold like the Yerushalmi. Our Bavli is not of the opinion that you get married on Yom Kippur. You don't get married on Yom Kippur. So what do you do? So basically, to make a long story short, to quickly summarize yesterday's daf, so he's going to marry the second wife and give both his original wife and the second wife a conditional get. And we spoke yesterday about what exactly will trigger the condition, so that when all is said and done, Yom Kippur will come and go, and ultimately he will only be married to one of those women. Either the trigger for the conditional get will take effect for the second wife, and so that means then that retroactively she was divorced from him, and so that means then that he was only married to one, or if in the event that his wife dies, so then he will trigger the get of his with his wife, with his original wife. And if you remember the Gemara yesterday, the Gemara says, how is he going to trigger it? The condition that he put in is, I'm going to run to Shul. And the Gemara yesterday's daf said, so that if in the event he sees his wife dying, so again, tragedy of tragedies, but he's going to run to Shul, so that he's going to activate the get with his wife. And then that means then that he's going to be married retroactively only to the second wife, not the first wife.
Okay, so this is not something simple, like giving a siddur.
I don't know. Well, it is Yom Kippur, so it's stuck. But I get your point. Your point is well taken. Right? Why run to shul? Why did that become like the trigger? I don't know. But it's fair. In other words, it could have been something easier. I'll pick this up. Or also maybe the complicated nature of it is just simply because, you know, you don't want to. I mean, you want it to be something that would require some effort. I'm unsure. Meaning the question. Okay, people will know. Yeah.
But isn't this form rare in a way?
No. In other words, no. This is not.
In the mafreya, you're going.
Yeah, but that's not. It's not. You're not making a decision. No decision's being made. Meaning, one of them is going to get divorced based.
Status change. That's the mafreya.
Okay, but just because something's the mafreya doesn't mean it revolves around brera. Meaning, when I give something, but I attach a condition to it, so the condition is just a condition, but the activation of it goes back to the time where I started the whole process. So this is not a brera discussion. This is just simply in other words, there were two conditions built into the divorce that he made with his original wife and his new wife. Okay, that was yesterday's daf in a nutshell, and that was the Bavli solution to how you're going to do it. We're in the Gemara. We're continuing in the Gemara.
There was shul that at the time of your people were in the shul rather than as the Mikdash,
right? Well, we'll see later on the Masechta. There was a big crowd in the base of Mikdash.
I
assume the shuls were operating, but there's a big, large crowd of people in the base of Mikdash. That comes up later in the Masechta. Okay, Maskif Lo Ravasi. Okay, in the Gemara, we are now on your Gimel Amid Beis. We're about two lines before the lines get wide, and Ravasi has a difficulty. Vitim or Avira, some states Rav Avira. What was the assumption that we made in yesterday's daf? The Torah says v'chiper ba'ado va'ad beiso. The word beiso means his house, but we know it's a euphemism. It means his wife. But what did the Gemara say yesterday? It means his full-fledged wife. There are two stages to marriage. There's Kiddushin, there's Nisuin. And the Gemara said yesterday, it's obviously both. It's Kiddushin and Nisuin. Meaning it has to be that he is married to his wife with both stages of Kiddushin and Nisuin. So that means to tell me that every time the Torah says the word beiso, it means full-fledged wife. And also it means one wife. So the Gemara says, well, if that's true, aren't we going to have to revisit the whole mitzvah of Yibam? Because the Torah says regarding Yavama, the Torah uses the term bias, right? And so and what bothers the Gemara now is that, let's say a man's married to two wives, right? No, it says I don't have the pasuk in front of me, but it says bias over there. Rashi brings down. It's in the Chumash. So, but anyway, if I get the take a look, right? What's the pasuk base achutza? Okay. Anyway, it says bias over there. So the Gemara over here is bothered. So that means we're going to have to revisit the entire mitzvah of Yibum. If a man's married to two wives, no mitzvah of Yibum. Okay. Well, it's not okay. In other words, God willing, when we get to Masechta Yevamos, we're going to see again and again the mitzvah of Yibam applies even if he died leaving multiple wives. Now, the truth of the matter is, we'll see later on, only one of them need the mitzvah of Yibam, but still, there's a mitzvah. So, based on our analysis of the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur, are we going to revisit the entire mitzvah of Yibam? The Gemara says, no, we're not. So the Gemara says, Yivimto, Yivimto, Riba. So the Gemara says, because if you look over there in the Parsha of Yibam, you see the word Yivimto mentioned multiple times, and therefore the mitzvah of Yibam would be even if he was married to more than one wife. Okay. Maskal Ravina Vitem Rav Shrav Yala Miata Rusalotis Yabim. Well, again, if we're investing so much into the pshat of bias, so what does that mean? Does that mean that in the mitzvah of Yibam, let's say the man dies and he left a wife and he died childless, and his wife wasn't a full-fledged wife, meaning he only undergone kiddushin with this woman, but he didn't go through nisuin. So is there no mitzvah of Yibum? Now again, we know that there is. But based on our Gemara, the conclusion should be that there shouldn't be. Because again, the Torah over there in by Yibum just uses the word bias. And our understanding of the word bias is full-fledged wife.
Is that Rabbanan in the Yibum case?
No. You're talking about the potential of violating one of the arayis in the Torah. So there has to be a mitzvah. There has to be a mitzvah of Yibum. So the Gemara says, So the Gemara says, okay, you're right, bias does mean full-fledged wife, but there's a word used in the Parsha of Yibam, the word is achutza, which means that, we're darshaning, that means that that even if she's just an arusa, so nevertheless, there's still going to be a mitzvah of Yibam, period. Okay, two small points of the Gemara. In the meantime, however, the Gemara there has concluded. We've dealt with now, that basically is the end of yesterday's daf. We dealt with the dilemma of, according to Rav Yehuda, how are you going to set aside another wife and still have him experience Yom Kippur with only one wife? So again, the Bavli solution, a multiple get, attach a condition to each one of the gittin, fine. And then the Gemara wants to know if this term bias can be applied the same way in the mitzvah of Yibam that it is over here regarding the mitzvah of Kohen Gadol Yom Kippur. And basically the Gemara says no. It can't be applied the same way. We have other limudim by the mitzvah of Yibam. Ten Rabban, Kohen Gadol Makriv Onin. Okay. We have a braisa over here, lost in this whole discussion. Well, not lost, but tucked away in this whole discussion is that on Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol is going to be an Oni. Right? Now, not exactly, but let's just say yes. He lost his wife on Yom Kippur. Now, the Gemara later on will point out, technically speaking, they're not married, because technically speaking, he activated the get. And okay, but all said and done, we're talking about the loss of a wife. So the loss of wife to the Kohen Gadol means that he's an Oni. Now, like we've discussed many times before, we know aninus, unfortunately, nowadays, just in terms of when you lose a karev, when you lose one of the seven relatives, so a person's an Onin, which means that he's going to be patur from mitzvos until the actual kvur, until the burial. Or if he has nothing to do with the burial anymore, so then he no longer is an Onin. But anyway, and our period of aninus can extend a day, could extend 2 days. In other words, this goes up to the funeral. As far as a Kohen and Karban is concerned, there is a din of Onin, but only for the Yom HaMisa, only for the actual day of death. So if a Kohen loses any one of the seven relatives, so for that day, that Kohen cannot do Avoda, and that Kohen cannot, and certainly that Kohen cannot eat Kachim.
Even for Tzibur?
The Torah says, yes, the Torah says regarding, you go to the end of Sefer Devarim, you go to Parshas Kisavo, the Torah says, Lo achalti ba'oni mimenu. I didn't eat it in a state of aninus. And there the Torah is talking about Maiser Sheni. And the Gemara time and again repeats, if you can't eat Maiser Sheni in a state of Onain, you for sure cannot eat Karban in a state of aninus as well. So Kohen, if and when he's an Onain, so for that day, he can't eat Karban, he can't do the Avoda. The night afterwards may be a Din Derabanan. The Gemara discusses that a number of times. That's all by a regular Kohen. Kohen Gadol, now we're learning in our Gemara, Kohen Gadol is different. He does the Avoda even in a state of Aninus. He won't eat Karban in a state of Aninus, but he will do the Avoda in a state of Aninus.
Aaron was able to eat on the Korban.
Yeah. So let's review, meaning you're right, but let's review. Aaron did eat Karban in a state of Aninus. He lost Nadav and Avihu on that day, Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Second year after they left Mitzrayim, the Hakamas HaMishkan. So he ate Karban. So if you remember, that was a big machlokes between Moshe and Aaron. Aaron ate the Karban, but he only ate the Karban that was specific to that day. The Karban Shaita. But the Karban Chatzos of Rosh Chodesh, Aaron did not eat that because he was an Onain. Moshe didn't fully understand. Moshe was upset. How come you didn't eat it? Moshe said, you should have eaten it. And Aaron said, no, I'm right. I shouldn't have eaten it because you're right, Hashem told you that I should be eating the Karban. But that's only the Karban specific to today. But Karban Lidoros, I shouldn't be eating, and Aaron was right.
So there's no Karban for that day.
Well, we're not talking about the eating. We're talking right now about just the Avoda, just doing the Avoda. Mm-hmm. So the halach is by Kohen Gadol, he can do the Avoda while in a state of aninus. So that's what we're learning right now. So Kohen Gadol makrivonin. Ve'eino ochel. So the Kohen Gadol is makriv as an onin and he doesn't eat. Now mind you, by the way, on Yom Kippur, there's nothing really to talk about in terms of achila. Nobody's eating on Yom Kippur. That's not the issue. The issue is just simply doing the avoda. Kohen Gadol does the avoda in the state of aninus. Rav Yehuda Amar Kol Hayom. Now Rav Yehuda adds to this, and his addition is hard to understand. Rav Yehuda says Kol Hayom all day. Okay, meaning isn't that basically what the Tanakhama is saying? So the Gemara wonders. My Kol Hayom. So Rava says, do you know how to understand Rabbi Yehuda? It means like this. If he's an Onain, Rachman Litzlan, if the Kohen Gadol becomes an Onain, and he happens not to be in the Beis HaMikdash for whatever reason, he doesn't have to be in the Beis HaMikdash all the time. So what Rabbi Yehuda means is that you take him from his house to the Beis HaMikdash so that he could do the Avoda. Okay. The obvious question is, why would you do that? What would be the purpose? Now there is a fascinating Rashi over here. So Rashi writes, "Laviu misoch beso." Rashi mitzvahu sheviu lemikdash laavod kol hayom kidei lefakech tzaaro. So Rashi writes, you know what it's going to do? It's going to take his mind off his loss. Okay. Now, it is fascinating. It's an interesting Rashi. That according to Rav Yehuda, the way Rav is understanding Rav Yehuda, that Kol Hayom means you bring him from his house to the Beis HaMikdash so that he could do the Avoda in a state of aninus. So Rashi says, and the purpose of which? get his mind off of his loss.
So the Kohen Gadol is secluded for 7 days.
No. Let's not. Hold on a second. We're confusing two issues. It's fine. This is not Yom Kippur. This is just in general.
Okay.
The reason why we're talking about it is because we just have been spending the entire daf yesterday talking about the Kohen Gadol losing his wife on Yom Kippur. So it just kind of segued into the discussion of what does the Kohen, what's the Kohen Gadol's general status when he's a nonin, and so the general status is he does the avoda, period. Now when Rav Yehuda says kol hayom, so what the Gemara now is proposing is that kol hayom means you even bring him from his house, and Rashi says to get his mind off.
Isn't Kohen Gadol Kohen Hedya right now?
No, Kohen Gadol. Strictly Kohen Gadol. Kohen Hedya does not do the avoda.
So he becomes an on a regular day.
On a regular day. So kol hayom, my kol hayom. So I'm a revelo into chelo havi mitoch beso. I'm a Abaye. So Abaye says to Rav, that's very difficult to imagine, but that's really what Rabbi Yehuda means, and I'll explain why. Says Abaye, hashda the Rabbi Yehuda afukim afkin alei de Tanya. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, you know what we do generally with an onin, a kohen who's an onin, we take him out of the base of mikdash. De Tanya will learn a brisa. Your omin amakir vagabe mizbeach vishamash meis lameis. Let's say he's doing avoda. Now he's doing avoda. That he obviously is talking about a kohen. Are we talking about a kohen gadol? Are we talking about a kohen hedyot? Okay, so this is not clear. Okay. Rashi says that we're talking about a kohen hedyot. Okay, right. In fact, if you take a look at the last Rashi, Rashi says. Wait. You're right, but if you take a look at Tosos, you will see Tosos does not agree with you or Rashi. But let's just, right now, keep it. Well, he learns the Gemara. I mean, you have to go through Tosfos inside. He learns up the Gemara. But right now, let's just do the Gemara like Rashi, present it simply. We're talking right now about a Kohen Hedyot. Kohen Hedyot's doing the Avoda, and then the discovery is that he's an Onin. He lost one of his seven relatives. So what happens? So Rabbi Yehuda says, okay, stop, go. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Yigmor. So Rav Yossi says, no, you finish the avoda and then you leave, and then you exit the Beis HaMikdash. So, the question goes like this. Now, according to Rashi, it's a bit of a difficult question, because here's how the question works according to Rashi. Rashi says, I'm bothered. Rav Yehuda, you're arguing, this is Rava's understanding of Rav Yehuda, you're arguing that for the Kohen Gadol, if he's sitting at home, and he's an Onin, you bring him to the Beis HaMikdash in order to do the avoda. Well, I don't really understand, because Rav Yehuda elsewhere says that if it's a Kohen Hedyot and he's doing the Avoda and learning about his Aninas, according to Rav Yehuda, you yank him from the Beis HaMikdash. So, now, we're having two different discussions, meaning one is talking about a Kohen Gadol and the other is talking about a Kohen Hedyot. Now, what you could have just simply have said is, well, Kohen Gadol is different than a Kohen Hedyot. You could have said that, and that's why, by the way, Tosfos doesn't like the pshat of Rashi. Now you understand.
But Kohen Gadol works even during the onin.
Okay. But what bothers Rava, in other words, I'm just explaining the Gemara according to Rashi. What bothers Rava is Rav Yehuda, like, you can't, how can you tell me that we're going to move to the Beis HaMikdash when the general movement is away from the Beis HaMikdash when a Kohen is an onin? Good. And you're telling me that we're going to grab the Kohen Gadol from his house and yank him to the Beis HaMikdash? Hard to imagine. Ela Marava, Michael Ayam. So the Gemara says Abaye made a very sharp point to Rava, so sharp that Rava actually changed his understanding of the Braisa. You know what Rav Yehuda means? It means that he doesn't do the avoda kol hayom, because for fear that he may eat. Meaning, you're a Kohen Gadol. You could do the Avoda. Totally legitimately correct to do the Avoda. Even in a state of Aninus, as opposed to a regular Kohen who cannot do the Avoda. Fine. But what Rav Yehuda is concerned about is the following. He could do the Avoda, but he can't eat Karban. Kohen Gadol can't eat Karban. So what we're going to do is we'll allow him to do the Avoda, but not the entire day, so that we're worried for fear lest he may come and eat carbon. That's the new pshat in Rabbi Yehuda. So Hamalei Rav Ada Bar Ava LaRav Migaz Rabbi Yehuda Shemi Yochal VaHatanan. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. Meaning, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that's a concern. That's really a concern. What about our Mishnah? Rabbi Yehuda Omer Afi Shacharos Matkin Alo Shema Tamos Ishto. So because Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah says, what do? We put aside another wife in the event that his original wife dies. And our Mishnah, what's happening? He's an onen, and yet we have no problem with him doing the avoda for the entirety of the day, and we're not worried about him eating. So if all this bothers you now, Ben, now we can make the point. So Amalei Hachi Hashta Hasim Kevin Diyamakipurimu Dekulei Amalo Kaachli Hanami Lo Asilamecha Hacha Dekulei Amachli Hu Nami Asilamecha. So the Gemara says context. Context is really the answer to so many questions. Context. On Yom Kippur, we're not worried about the Kohen Gadol eating. Nobody's eating. So what are you worried about? Oh, he may do the avodah, he may eat. No, he won't. It's Yom Kippur, nobody's eating that day. So, yes, Rav Yehuda, generally speaking, is concerned that if you let the Kohen Gadol stay in the Beis Mikdash too long on his Yom Aninus, so yeah, in general, we're worried that he's going to end up eating. Because everybody's eating. But in Yom Kippur, when no one's eating, so we're not worried about the Kohen Gadol eating as well. Now, the Gemara, one last question before we move on to the next Mishnah. So the Gemara says, now, the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur is not really an onen, meaning he lost his wife, and it's tragic. But he's not an onen. Why? Because of the entirety of yesterday's daf. What do we learn in yesterday's daf? He gave her a conditional get. He divorced her. So the only way his wife would be dying is only if he divorced her. So technically speaking, they're not married. They're not married. But the Gemara says, okay, that's technical. That's very technical. You're right. He's not technically an onen, but he lost his wife. Yes, it's his ex-wife. Correct. Agreed. But in other words, but he lost his wife, and now you'll forgive me, but I'm gonna just turn into a lawyer for the next like minute or two, and please forgive me. But so what? Meaning he lost his wife, and technically speaking, it's not his wife. And what the Gemara now is arguing is, yeah, but he's really sad. And so therefore, he can't do the avoda, and therefore, he can't do the avoda. And therefore, there will be a problem with him eating the carbon. Okay, he's very sad. But he's not an onen. I mean, I'm sounding like a lawyer right now.
Carbon was simple,
oh, okay, good. So that brings us to Rashi. Okay, good. Phil's out of the game. So the Gemara says, he's sad. And as a result of that, he can't eat carbon. Okay, but he's not an onen. So take a look at Rashi. Milo mitrad uvikachim be'inan simcha ugedula. So Rashi brings down, yeah, but when you eat carbon, you have to be in a state of happiness. You have to be simcha ugedula. Meaning there has to be a certain amount of regal nature to the eating of carbon. You can't be morose, you can't be sad, you can't be silly, right? That's the other side of it. In other words, but you have to be in a state of simcha, content, and just, it's a state of, it's a regal nature. Just like a king would eat, that's how a Kohen is supposed to be when he eats carbon. So therefore, the loss of his wife, so yes, technically speaking, you're right, it's his ex-wife. Technically speaking, he divorced from her. But it's his wife. When all said and done, it was his wife. And just for a technical reason, they're not married because of the retroactive divorce that he conditionally gave her. Fine. But it's his wife and he lost her. And now he's going to be in a sad state. And yes, that will impact on his ability to eat carbon because he's not in a state of simcha.
Is his eating part of the carbon concept, part of the avodah?
No. The only time that
why
there's...
Why don't you care about how his mood is?
Well, no. But in other words, the Rabbi Yehuda is worried that he may come to eat.
I'm just saying, but you're saying, but you know, they don't want him to eat carbon instead of melancholy, right?
Right.
But the question is that if it's really not part of the avodah, why do they care what his mood is?
No, Rabbi Yehuda, vis-a-vis the avodah, we don't care.
Right.
Rabbi Yehuda is just worried that if he's spending so much time in the Beis HaMikdash, he's going to come to eat. And the Gemara is just wondering, well, why would it be a problem for the Kohen Gadol? Now, again, I know it's Yom Kippur, no one's eating. But just in theory, why would it be a problem for the Kohen Gadol? He's not even a no-name. Like, why are we even having this discussion? So the Gemara says, we're having the discussion because he's not no-name, but he's sad. And you can't eat carbon in a state of melancholy. Again, Aaron ate it because the Kadosh Baruch Hu told him to eat it.
Right.
Okay, so you're right, but that's different. But Aaron wouldn't eat the chatas of the Rosh Chodesh because that's the rule. The rule is. Yeah, so right, so according to this Rashi, that is a good question. So in other words, when you punch the clock, so you have to punch the clock with a smile for the Kohen. The rest of us no. The rest of us we're fine. Okay, but if you're a Kohen doing the avoda, so you have to be smiling in the morning. Kol shivas yamim hu zarikas adam. Okay, now we're moving on to the next Mishnah, and the next Mishnah now continues this discussion of the shivas yamei afrasha. So he's suppressed in the Beis Hamikdash. He's there for 7 days. Locked in his solitude. Now his wife cannot be with him. Although as we learned over the course of the last 2 weeks of Yuma, he can get visitation. People can come and see him, spend some time with him. But what is he doing those 7 days? Meaning what's his week like? So that's this Mishnah. This Mishnah over here gives us a glimpse into what his week is going to look like. Specifically, look, he's going to be doing the Avodah Yom Kippur. And as we'll learn over the course of this Masechta, he is the sole Kohen responsible for all the Avodah. So what is he doing? So he's warming up. Okay, yeah, you'll forgive me. I know I give a lot of baseball analogy. But basically, that's what he's doing. He's warming up. In other words, for those 7 days, he's gonna be doing the Avodah Yom Kippur. So he's warming up. And truth be told, it's not me. It's Rashi. The first Rashi in the Mishnah. Who Zarek is Adam, shall tmeed him kedeshiye ragil umezuman ba'avodas Yom Kippurim. Okay, so he's going to be a regular, and he's going to be prepared. And when Yom Kippur comes, all this will not be foreign to him, right? Shechting the carbon, I've been doing it for the last 7 days. Okay, so and the Mishnah says so during those 7 days. So what prep activities are we talking about? I mean, I say prep activity, mind you, he's actually doing the avoda, but by just simply doing and repeating the avoda for those 7 days, he's going to get into the rhythm. So kol shivas yamim uzarik es adam. So he's sprinkling the blood. Umaktis HaKetaris is going to be burning Ketaris. Umetivis HaNeros, he'll be cleaning the candles. Now you saw that, I said Metivis HaNeros is cleaning the candles, right? Hatavis HaNeros, the Torah talks about Hatavis HaNeros, the cleaning of the candles. Now the Torah does not say lighting, nor does the Torah say cleaning. The Torah uses the term of Hatavis HaNeros, which just doesn't translate well into English. Hativ es HaNeros. Right, I know that, but in other words, we know what the word to improve the candles. It's hard to translate to English. Now, mind you, by the way, just in general, you should know it's a machlokus between the Rambam and everybody else, and that is a menorah lit during the day, meaning we know that the menorah is lit every night. That's clear, right? Is a menorah lit during the day as well? So it's not clear. It's not clear from the Torah. It's not clear from the Mishnayos. It's just simply not clear. The Torah and the Mishnayos keep using the language of lahativ es haneros. The Rambam's understanding is you light it. You light it. Menorah is lit all 24 hours of the day. It's lit during the night. It's lit during the day as well. That's the Rambam. So most Rishonim, you can take a look at Rashi right here in our Mishnah. So most Rishonim say no. The menorah is lit during the night, through the night, over the course of the night. Enough oil and enough wick so that there will be enough for the lasting of the night, and you take into consideration the winter night versus the summer night.
But it's lit in the morning, don't know.
It has remained lit in the morning, but in other words, it basically went out in the beginning of the morning. So and what you do in the morning is you clean it out. That's Hatavas HaNeros. So Amish is telling us that that's what part of what the Kohen Gadol is going to do. Umetiv is HaNeros. He'll clean out the candles. I'm explaining the Mishnah according to Rashi. Umakriv es HaRosh ves HaRegel. And he offers the head and the regal. We're going to talk later in the Masechta. I'm going back to Masechta Tamid. We talked about the march of the parts of the carbon Tamid up the ramp and onto the Mizbeach. And there was a march of 13 Kohanim. Am I right? I have this memory of 13 Kohanim. All right, we'll go over it. We'll see it again. And the first Kohen would be carrying the head and the regal and one of the legs of the animal. The animal was cut into limbs. It was not cut into pieces. So, meaning, yes, pieces, but not like butcher pieces, meaning it was cut into limbs. And so the head and the leg was brought up by the first Kohen. During those 7 days before Yom Kippur, that first Kohen was the Kohen Gadol. V'shar kol yamim im rasa l'akriv makriv. Now, any other day of the year, meaning that's all description of the 7 days prior to Yom Kippur. Any other day of the year, the Kohen Gadol wants to do the avoda, he has the right. He's a Kohen Gadol. It's good to be the king, it's good to be the Kohen Gadol. He can at any time, any point in time, if he wants to, step in and say, I'll take this. Shekohen Gadol makriv chelek barosh v'notel chelek barosh. He can offer at the head. I mean, Rosh over here mean doesn't mean head of carbon. Rosh over here means at first. But no, to chelik b'rosh, and he gets first portion. Kohen gadol. Okay. So Mantana, our Gemara is going to ask a very detailed question, and that's the following: I'm Rav Chista, the look Rabbi Akiva. Our Mishnah doesn't go like Rabbi Akiva. Okay. At what point do I start introducing? How about now? Now's a good time. Okay. We've seen this already before, and we're going to repeat this information again. During those 7 days, the Kohen Gadol is also sprinkled with the Paraduma. There's a concern that the Kohen Gadol has come into contact with Tumas Meis, and so therefore, for those 7 days, he gets sprinkled. Now, we already saw Machlokis. He gets sprinkled on day 3 and 7. He gets sprinkled all 7 days, although we pointed out earlier in the Masechta, maybe not day 4, fine. But in other words, the Kohen Gadol is going to get sprinkled with the Paraduma. All right. Rabbi Kiva is a very interesting shita, and that is the following. Let's say you don't need the Paraduma to be sprinkled upon you, and you get sprinkled with the Paraduma. So you know what happens, says Rabbi Kiva? You become Tameh. Okay. Right. Does that make sense? No. But it's a Paraduma. That's fine. Okay. Sorry. Okay. We'll argue later. But fine. That's the sheet of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva says that if you get sprinkled with the Paraduma and you don't need it, you're Tameh. Now, you're not Tameh for 7 days, meaning you didn't come into contact with a mace. You'll be Tameh until you travel the mikvah and you experience Harav Shemesh. Okay? Fine. Do we hold like Rabbi Akiva? Yeah. I don't know. But I do know what the Gemara is trying to argue now is our Mishnah doesn't go like that. Our Mishnah cannot be going like Rabbi Akiva. Why? Because think about it. He's been sprinkled with the Paraduma. Chances are he doesn't need it, which means then that he'll be Tameh. Right. So how are you going to get sprinkled and do the Avoda? Right. So it must be that our Mishnah is not going like Rabbi Akiva. Now, if you think about it for just a moment, you'll realize there's a really easy solution.
Another thing is that could this be a Darabanan decree?
No. Rabbi Akiva is talking Minotaur. Okay. So what you could do, which the Gemara will point out at the end of this whole discussion, is according to Rabbi Akiva, meaning our Mishnah could be going like Rabbi Akiva, let him do the Avoda, and then before the day's over, sprinkle him with the Paraduma, and then he'll run to the mikvah, and then he'll experience Harav Shemesh, and he'll be good. Yeah, but the sprinkling of the Paraduma is an extra stringency, meaning we really, between you and I, we really know he's not Tameh. But we do it as a chomer. We do it as an extra stringency. So the chances are he's not tummy. I hear you. We're sprinkling it because he may be, but we know probability wise he's not. So our Mishnah. Now I already gave away the end of the Gemara, but let's pretend right now I said nothing. Our Mishnah is not going like Rabbi Akiva. How can he do the avoda if in fact he's tummy? After getting sprinkled with the paraduma, if it's not necessary, you become tummy. How can he do the avoda? Therefore, what Rav Huna is arguing is, sorry, what Rav Chista is arguing is that our Mishnah is not going like Rabbi Akiva. Fine. Now, mind you, the Chachamim disagree with Rabbi Akiva. We'll see the Mishnah together in just a moment. The Chachamim disagree with Rabbi Akiva. The Chachamim say, no, if you're sprinkled with the Paraduma and you don't need it, you don't become Tameh. Now, there is an idea of the Paraduma being Metameh Taharim and Metar Tameim, but not the person who got sprinkled. That's the person who carries it. We'll talk about that later in today's daf, but not the person who got sprinkled. So according to the Chachamim, if you get sprinkled with the water of the Paraduma and you don't eat it, you're fine. Your status has not changed at all. So he darshens it from Pesukim. The Gemara is going to talk about it a little bit.
Shlomo also
hinted at it. Okay, correct. All very good. All part of today's daf. I'm just introducing it so that we're just familiar with the ideas, so that as we now, the Gemara throws us into a machlokas between Rabbi Akiva and the Chacham, and we're now a little bit more informed. Okay, so Mantan, I'm going to go back to start from the Gemara. So Mantan, Amar Chistadol, Rabbi Akiva, our Mishnah is not going like Rabbi Akiva. Di Rabbi Akiva, Amar Tar Shnafla, Alav Hazatam Aso. So because Rabbi Akiva is of the opinion that if I have someone who's Tahor and he gets sprinkled with the Paraduma, so he's Tameh. Okay, so Hechi Avod Avoda. So the Gemara asks a simple question. So how can he do the Avoda? Okay, so what Rav Chista now is arguing is our Mishnah is not going like Rabbi Akiva. And Ditanya, now as long as the Gemara says, as long as we brought it up, so let's see the Braisa. V'hizah Torah al-Tameh, al-Hatameh Tahor, Ve'ala tahor tamei divrei Rabbi Akiva. So Rabbi Akiva is a drasha, and you will sprinkle, the tahor person will sprinkle the tamei person. The tamei person, of course he's tamei. In other words, why else is he getting sprinkled? So what Rabbi Akiva is doing is he's darshaning the pasuk that if you're tamei, you become tahor. But what if you're tamei? What if you're tahor? The opposite, you become tamei. V'ala tahor tamei, divrei Rabbi Akiva. V'chacham amorim, man dvarim halalo amorim, ela bedvarim ha-mekablam tuma. The chachamim say, no. The drasha, the pasuk is open for a drasha. That much we'll give you. But that's not the drasha. The drasha is much different. The drasha teaches us a different halacha. What's a different halacha? So the Gemara says, my he? Okay, now we're going to learn. What is the Chachamim going to do with that pasuk? Okay, now we have a Mishnah, 13th perek of Masechta Parah. 12th perek, third Mishnah. Okay, that's where I got the number 3 from. 12th perek, third Mishnah. Hiskamin la'azosel beima v'yiza la'adam. It's an interesting halacha. I looked it up last night. My knowledge of Masechta Parah, not good. So I looked it up. So the Mishnah over there describes the following. You dip the... you're holding Azov. Azov translates in English as hyssop. Now, that doesn't help me. So I'm going back to Azov. You dip the Azov into the water. Right? And the water, by the way, is a combination of Maim Chaim together with the ashes of the Paraduma. When you dip the Azov into the water, you have to have the right intent. Now, nothing supernatural. The right intent just simply means I plan on sprinkling somebody who's subject who could be Mekabel Tumah. If, however, the person who dips, the Kohen who dips, if his intent is I'm dipping it for something that is not subject to Tumah, let's say for an example, I mean, this is a Mishnah's example. Let's say he dips it with the intent of sprinkling an animal. Animal is not subject to becoming Tumah. An animal cannot become Tumah. Now, granted, when the animal dies, the animal is going to be a source of Tumah. But we're talking about a live animal. So if I dip the Azov into water with the intent of sprinkling an animal, that's not a good dip. And all that water that's being absorbed into the bulb of the azov, it's not going to do anything. It's not going to effectuate. And so he could sprinkle, and it's the helfnisht. It's not going to help. And so that's what the Mishnah and Parah is describing. Niskavin lahazos ala behema. If your intent while you dipped is to sprinkle an animal, v'hiza al ha'adam, and then after having dipped and having some water left, you sprinkle on a man, imesh be'ezov yishne. So if there's any water left on the ezov, it's not good. What you have to do? Re-dip. The dipping has to be with the intent of sprinkling something which is subject to becoming tameh. It's a halacha and parah. Niskavim la'azot saladam v'izala behem, imesh be'ezov lo yishne. Now, the Mishnah over there in Parah goes over the opposite scenario. Let's say when I dipped with the intent of sprinkling a human being who was subject to becoming Tamei. And then for whatever reason, he sprinkled on an animal. It didn't ruin his dipping. His dipping is still good. If there's any water left on the Azov, he can go ahead and sprinkle it in the direction of the person. Fine. That's a halacha in the Mishnayos and Parah. Might and where do the Chachamim derive that halacha from? That's what our Mishnah is pointing out. That's what the Chachamim do with the pasuk that Rabbi Akiva applied to the other halacha. So my time with Rabbi Akiva nechsev rechman aviza Torah alav my al hatamei shma min al hatamei Torah v'al Torah tamei. So Rabbi Akiva takes this pasuk and says, look, the Torah didn't have to say the word tamei. It could have just simply said alav, because contextually we know the person who's being sprinkled is tamei. The fact that the Torah goes out of its way to say tamei means that the paraduma has the opposite effect. If you're tamei, you become tahor. And if you're tahor and you get sprinkled with the paraduma, you become tamei. V'rabbanan haledvarma mekablam tuma udasa. And the chachamim, what do they do with that pasuk? 12th parak of Masechta Parah. Third Mishnah, the 12th parak of Masechta Parah. This idea that when you dip, you have to dip with the intent of sprinkling something, either a person or kalim that could be mekabel tumah. Avahacha kavachomer. But as far as over here is concerned, the chachamim say to Rabbi Akiva, you can't be right. Let's think about this logically. Kavachomer who? Im ala tamei Torah ala Torah lo kol shekein. Now they say the chachamim say to Rabbi Akiva, if I sprinkle the paraduma on someone who's tamei and he becomes tahor, What do you think will happen if I sprinkle on somebody who's tahor? He's for sure going to be tahor. Kal v'chomer. Now, everyone here, right, I see a couple smiles, because, meaning, kal v'chomer on parah aduma, right, that's what we're doing? Rabbi Akiva, hainu dekam reshlomo. And Rabbi Akiva says, you're really going to make a kal v'chomer on parah aduma? The most perplexing mitzvah in the Torah, the one where Shlomo said, Amarti achakma v'hi rechoka mimeni. Shlomo says, look, I'm pretty smart. Let's just admit it. I'm pretty smart. And nevertheless, hi rechoka mimeni. I still don't understand the parah aduma, because it's illogical. So the Rabbi Akiva says to the Chachamim, how can you apply logic to the mitzvah parah aduma when we know logic simply doesn't work? V'rabbanan ha'u l'mazeh l'mazeh alav tahor. V'nogeh b'hem tameh. And the Chachamim say, you're right. There is an illogical nature to parah aduma, but not here. Meaning, in terms of getting sprinkled, we can allow logic to dictate the terms. If you're tamei, you got sprinkled, you're tahor. If you're tahor and you got sprinkled, you're for sure tahor. The logic will work over there. Where is it illogical? It's illogical in the sense that the one who sprinkles and the one who receives sprinkled is tahor, but the nogea. But if you just touch the mechatas, you become tamei. So umazet tahor. Now the Gemara says, what, hold on a second. Really? The one who sprinkles is tahor? So the Gemara says, the sprinkler is tamei. My mazet. So the Gemara says, well, we're going to have to change the pshat in the Torah. The mazeh over there is no geya. Gemara says, well, that's strange. Va'aksiv mazeh. But the Torah says the sprinkler. Va'aksiv no geya. And the Torah also says the no geya. Va'od mazeh by kivas begadim. And no geya lo by kivas begadim. And furthermore, you can't tell me that the mazeh is someone who just simply touches, because we know, read the psukim. The Torah says that the mechabes, sorry, the mazeh requires kivas begadim. In other words, not only does it become tamei, the clothing that it wears becomes tamei. But the nogeya, but the one who touches the mechatas, he becomes tamei, but the clothing that he wears does not become tamei. So, elamai mazeh, no say. So the Gemara says, yeah, well, you know what the Torah means when it says mazeh? It means no say the one who carries the mechatas. V'nechso rechmanu no say. Now, odd, why doesn't the Torah just simply say that if that's what the Torah means? So, my time exceed mazeh, kamashman debin and shir hazah. So the Gemara says, because there's an amount you have to carry. What's the amount you have to carry? So we'll get to that in just a second. A shear. The Gemara knows, isn't that a machlokus, whether or not there's a shear for how much water? So the Gemara says, yes and no. The debate of whether or not there's a minimum amount of water, that means how much water should be sprinkled on the guy. There's a debate. Aval bimana srichashir. But when you dip, there has to be a certain amount of water in the kli that you have to dip into. Did not come yehebahan vihe kidei hazah kidei sheyitba roshay give olin viyazeh. So the Gemara says that in terms of in the kli, how much water should there be? Everyone agrees. The amount that the Azov can absorb, the heads of the Azov can absorb that water. Okay, so to make a long story short, Machlokuchin Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim, how to darshan the Pasuk, Eizah Torah LaTameh. Rabbi Akiva says that's in relationship to the one getting sprinkled, where if you're Tahor, you become Tameh. If you're Tameh, you become Tahor. The Chachamim say no. It's teaching us a different halacha altogether. 12th parak of Masechta Parah, the halacha of intent when you dip the Azov into the water. Fine. And the point the Gemara now is making is that our Mishnah can't be going like Rabbi Akiva. Why? Because our Mishnah is describing that the Kohen Gadol is doing the Avodah those 7 days while being sprinkled with the Parah Aduma, with the Mechatas. And according to Rabbi Akiva, once he's sprinkled, he's Tameh. So how can he do the Avodah? So Rav Chista is arguing our Mishnah cannot be going like Rabbi Akiva. To which now Abaye says, I feel it him Rabbi Akiva. Nah, you can say our Mishnah is going like Rabbi Akiva. David avoda kula yomu lapanya madu aleha vitavil v'avid erev shemesh. So because according to what you can do, according to Rabbi Kiva, is very simple. Have him do the avoda that day, meaning all 7 days of the hafrasha. Have him do the avoda. We're going to sprinkle him with the paraduma after he does the avoda. And before he turns into night, you'll sprinkle him with the paraduma after he does the avoda. He'll tovel in the mikvah. He'll experience Erev Shemesh. And tomorrow's another day. And it's not, and you don't have to exclude our Mishnah from Rabbi Akiva.
What's the point of doing that?
Right, so the point is, again, because you don't want to lose out on him becoming prepared for Yom Kippur. On the other hand, you also have this Chumrah where he gets sprinkled with the Paraduma. Okay.
Do you do the sixth night also? It would be the night before Yom Kippur?
In other words, you want to hit him all 7 days. Again, all 7 days, day 3 and 7. Okay, but you want to hit him. Okay, and let's just quickly finish up the daf. It's a very technical discussion, but it's technical, it's Torah. And that is the following. What's the order? Right? Our Mishnah says, Kol Shevas HaYamim Muzarek Es Adam, sprinkles of blood. Presumably, we're talking about the Dam Tamid. Makir Sekataris, he burns the incense. Okay, incense is burned both in the morning and the afternoon. And then, Meitiv Es Neiros. And then he cleans the candles. Cleans the menorah. That's the order of our Mishnah. Okay, is that a correct order? Why not? I mean, of course, it could be, but Amma Ketores Bereisha V'Hadar Neiros. Our Mishnah's order is first Ketores and Neir Uriminu. The Gemara says that's not the Mishnah in Talmud. Misha Zacha B'Dishim Mizbecha B'Nim Misha Zacha B'Menor Misha Zacha B'Ketores. The Mishnah in Talmud has the order as Menorah, followed then by Ketores. So let's say cleaning. Let's learn the Gemara like Rashi. Let's say cleaning. So Am Ravuna Mantana Tamid Rabbi Shimon Isha Amitzbehu. So the Gemara says, okay, what did you quote from me? A Mishnah, the Masech Tamid. The Mishnah Masech Tamid is authored by Rabbi Shimon Isha Mitzbah. Meaning, we're learning a Mishnah in Yuma. You're asking me from a Mishnah in Tamid. It's a machlokas. The Mishnah in Tamid is going like is authored by, I mean, edited by Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, but authored by, attributed to Rabbi Shimon Isha Mitzbah. Excuse me. Now the Gemara says, now that doesn't really work out. Meaning to say that the Mishnah in Talmud is going like Rabbi Shimon Ish HaMitzpeh, it doesn't work out for the following reason. Because Ba'al HaLakar Mizrach Tzfonis. No say Mizrach Tzfonim Ma'arav is Dramas. No say Ma'arav is Dramas. The order of the application of the blood of the Karban Talmud. So the Mishnah in Talmud says, here's the order. You go to Mizrach Tzfoni, you go to the northeast, and then you go to Maravis Dramas, then you go to the southwest. In other words, the application of blood of the Karban Tamid is 2, which is 4. You hit the one corner, the northeast corner, and then you go to the opposing southwest corner. Notice in Maravis Dramas, Vitini Allah Rabbi Shimon Isha Mitzvah, Mishana Betamid. Mizrach Tzfon is no same Mizrach Tzfon, Maravis Dramas, no same Marava, the Achar Kach, no same Droma. So, Rabbi Shimon Ish HaMitzpah says that for the Karban Tamid, even though it's an Ola,
usually daven with Rabbi Shaked and Rabbi Nachman, today should join the main minion in the Beis Medrash again. If you normally daven with Rabbi Shaked and Rabbi Nachman, please join us in the Beis Medrash today.
According to Rabbi Shimon Ish HaMitzpah, what you're going to do is you're going to reverse the order for the Talmud. Talmud just has a different order. Okay. And even though, mind you, that position, Rabbi Shimon Isha Mitzvah, goes against the Mishnah and Talmud. So the Mishnah and Talmud are not going like Rabbi Shimon. So, Allah, Rabbi Yochanan, my Tana Seder Yuma, sorry, Man Tana Seder Yuma, Rabbi Shimon Isha Mitzvah. So it's the same basic answer, but we're now going to suggest that the Mishnah and Yuma is going like Rabbi Shimon Isha Mitzvah. V'rami Seder Yuma, Seder Yuma. So the Gemara says, fine, but now we're going to have a contradiction between one Mishnah in Yuma and another Mishnah in Yuma. Okay, so you know what? Let's hold right here. We'll pick it up right from this point tomorrow, where we're going to compare the Mishnahs in Yuma. Okay, so quickly, let's summarize. The beginning of today's daf, we finished off the discussion of the Kohen Gadol with his one wife. The Gemara segued into a discussion of a Kohen Gadol being an Onin. He does the Avodah while being an Onin. He doesn't eat carbon while being an Onin. And then the Gemara addressed, well, on Yom Kippur, when he loses his wife, God forbid, if he loses his wife, he's not technically an Onin, but still he's extraordinarily sad, which would, in general, not Yom Kippur, obviously, but in general, would preclude him from eating carbon. And then we moved on to the next Mishnah, where the Mishnah over here describes that for those 7 days, he's going to basically be doing the avodah those 7 days, as Rashi explains, to prep him and to accustom him to doing the avodah. So then Yom Kippur, he will be ready to go. And then the Gemara's discussion, almost all of today's discussion was, can our Mishnah synchronized with the opinion of Rabbi Kiva, because Rabbi Kiva says that if you're Tahor and you get sprinkled with the Paraduma, you become Tummy. So, and how can our Mishnah work according to Rabbi Kiva? So A, our Mishnah's not going like Rabbi Kiva, or that's Rav Chista, or B, no. In other words, they'll do the Avoda, and then at the end of the day, then he'll get sprinkled with the Paraduma, he'll tov in the mikvah, and he'll experience Erev Shemesh. And then, the last part of today's daf, we just are looking for authorship of our Mishnayos, and what is the proper order of the avoda of every day in the Beis HaMikdash. Ketoros followed by Neros, or the reverse. So we're going to see, our Mishnah has a very clear position, goes against the Mishnayos and Tamid. The Gemara says, that's fine, different authors. But what we're going to start off with tomorrow is, a Mishnah in Yuma doesn't seem to be in agreement with another Mishnah in Yuma.